The following sermon was delivered by Senior Pastor Reverend Dr. Scott Black Johnston in the sanctuary of Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. We welcome you to worship with us every Sunday in person or on live stream. For details, go to fapc.org. And now, here's Reverend Dr. Scott Black Johnston.
Bless you all for coming tonight. It is good to share this holy time with you. I have a few brief thoughts this evening to share. I want to talk about the heaviness that some of us feel when we gather in the candlelight and sing these old carols. And I want to talk about the joy that beckons to us on this singular evening. And then we'll sing some more. Let's start with the heaviness. In the early 1800s, at the same time that this good church was founded, the United States and Europe were in the midst of a season of dramatic change. Historians and countless social studies teachers call that consequential period the Industrial Revolution. During this fertile time, new technologies, mechanized looms running on steam power, increased human efficiency, and broadly raised the standard of living. Scholars argue that humanity's turn toward modern manufacturing represents one of the most important milestones in the history of our species. In moving the center of productivity from farms to factories, the Industrial Revolution reshaped human society. William Wordsworth lived and wrote during the Industrial Revolution. And the English poet worried that the march of progress came at a price. He saw it changing the fabric of British culture. As more and more individuals moved from rural areas to take factory jobs in cities, people began to lose touch with the rhythms of farming, rhythms attuned to nature, rhythms that had shaped human beings for millennia. In 1807, Wordsworth expressed his concern about these changes in a poem. His sonnet begins like this: "The world is too much with us, late and soon. Getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. Little we see in nature that is ours. We have given our hearts away, a sordid boon. The world is too much with us. We've given our hearts away." These words hang in the air. They haunt our time. For a society addicted to its screens, Wordsworth's concerns have an almost eerie relevance. What happens when people cannot bear to look up from their tech, desperately swiping for the next dopamine hit, enslaved to the influence of others? Wordsworth's poem raises fresh questions over the dawn of artificial intelligence. What will come of this new industrial revolution? What price will we pay for its many advancements? And yes, Wordsworth calls attention to the isolation that comes, it seems, with each successive technological leap. We've lost touch with nature. We barely know and scarcely trust our neighbors. Clouds of political rancor divide us, while those in power brew vile potions, concoctions that, sip by sip, could turn us all into trolls. The world is too much with us. According to Wordsworth, our souls have soaked up toxic levels of gunk. We've alienated ourselves from deep truths. We have given our hearts away. On Christmas Eve, these words have special meaning. Ask any clergy person, and they will tell you Christmas Eve is a beautiful night, a complicated night, a weird night. On this evening, in candlelit sanctuaries, churches play host to an unusual mix of human joy and sadness. The joy can be heard in the rustling of packages. It flashes when twinkling lights reflect in your eyes. It shines when people lean into each other to sing the carols. And yet, in these same family snapshots, there is sadness. Wordsworth gets it. We carry the burdens of the world with us. On this poignant night, we miss those who ought to be standing alongside us. We wring our hands over pending medical tests. We stress over our finances or lack thereof. And there's something about this night that leads people to take inventory of their lives. Why am I not in a relationship? Why is my work so unsatisfying? Where am I going? Some on this night, to quote that distinguished philosopher of Christmas, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, feel forsaken, marooned on the island of misfit toys. Still, we show up. We haul our sad, mournful, weary hearts to church. We clank along on our square wheels. We make our way to a clearing, to a place where we can scan the horizon with other misfits waiting for the dawning of a trustworthy star. On Christmas Eve, we search for signs of hope. We dare set our screens aside for a few minutes. We look to calibrate our moral compass without the aid of an algorithm. We read old stories. We listen. We ask, is this true? Is the babe born in a manger a message, a signpost? Is there redemption here? Hope for a broken heart? Love for an ailing soul? Direction for a warring world? Amid the booziness and giddiness of this night, the questions that we put to Christmas are serious, big time, bring a tear to your eye stuff. How does our faith answer? Well, it starts with angels, a chorus of angels. Christmas starts with good tidings of great joy. The angels sing. They say, fear not, God does not approach, swinging a sword. God's intention is peace. The Holy One extends goodwill to all, to all. The first word God speaks on Christmas is peace. And then the angels dance. Okay, that part isn't actually in the good book, but if you look at tonight's bulletin cover, This is how the great Italian painter Sandro Botticelli imagined the scene at the announcement of Christ's birth. After God's pronouncement of peace and goodwill, the angels dance, they embrace, they surround the nativity with revels. I love this painting. I love all these cavorting angels. And I'm also intrigued by a fascinating set of details that Botticelli includes. If you look closely along the bottom of the painting, you can find a number of small demons. Yes, demons. After all, what's Christmas without demons? Botticelli depicts these imps diving for cover. They drag their barbed spears into holes in the ground. The forces of darkness are fleeing this world, scrabbling back to hell. What about this night invites angels to dance and compels demons to beat a hasty retreat? What about this night draws people back year after year to sing with heaven and stand wide-eyed with shepherds gazing into a barn? Perhaps the simplest answer to these questions is best. On Christmas Eve, we sense that God has an important word to say. The Nativity has a truth to tell. What word? What truth? Good question. This December, church nativity scenes all across this country have become a nexus of controversy. Conflict around the manger? Well, of course, 2025 has been that kind of year. At Susanna's parish in Dedham, Massachusetts, the creche outside the church stands empty. Joseph, Mary, and the baby Jesus are missing. In their place is a chilling sign that says, "Ice was here." Officials from the archdiocese have protested, demanding that the parish replace the Holy Family, restore the nativity scene. Some call the empty manger blasphemous. Some call it truth-telling. This is not the first time in American history that manger scenes have reflected fissures in our culture. My friend Agnes Norfleet relates a story that took place in 1968 in Little Rock, Arkansas. At that time, Little Rock was on the front lines of the struggles for civil rights in this country. Amid the tension and violence that gripped the city, everyone was on edge, and not even Christmas went unscathed. One morning, the Arkansas Gazette reported that someone had stolen the baby Jesus from the manger in front of the state capitol. "The baby Jesus has been kidnapped," the paper declared. That evening, two of my friend Agnes's friends at home from college with little to do decided to go downtown and check out the crime scene. Parking, they noticed a large number of police cars ringing the Capitol. As they climbed the Capitol steps, they saw that an armed guard had been posted next to the manger. Finally, standing before Mary and Joseph alongside the shepherds and the angels, they looked down into the creche, and it was then that they saw it. The replacement baby Jesus had been secured with leg irons, chained to the manger. We are such a mess. Our brokenness, our fighting, our small, cruel hearts threaten to drown out a whole chorus of angels. Wordsworth was right. He's always been right. The world is too much with us. Although, of course, that's precisely why we need Christmas. Did you know that St. Francis of Assisi is credited with creating the very first nativity scene? Late in his life, Francis was struggling. He was vexed by problems that came from managing an order of all too human monks. He was physically exhausted by his ministries of compassion. He was struggling with his own health, beset by a chronic eye affliction. Tired and out of sorts, Francis retreated to a small rural village called Greccio for a time of reflection, rest, and prayer. It's not how we typically picture saints, you know, having been fed up with the world. It was only 15 days before Christmas. On this retreat, a simple truth came to Francis. It goes like this: I'm not the only person in the world to have suffered frustration and hardship. Others have been down this road. Others, including Christ. In Christ, God entered this messy world. Jesus came not to be pampered in a gilded palace, but to live in solidarity with humankind, to experience life in all its discomfort and assorted indignities. Emmanuel, God with us, really with us. Thinking on this, Francis summoned his friend, John, and he asked John to do something new, something wild. He asked John to recreate the nativity, complete with animals and hay, a manger, and a real baby, all crammed into a nearby cave. Francis wanted to see, touch, and smell the scene. He wanted to sense all that there was to sense in that humble, awkward, smelly barnyard. He wanted to gaze on a real infant napping in a food trough. So 800 years ago, John went to work. He created the first nativity scene. People from the village came to look at it. They stood and they stared at it, and they started to worship. So did Francis. In fact, Francis was so moved by the sight that he walked right into that cave and picked up the village child lying in the manger. The monk studied the child's face and began to fill with wonder. Love filled the saint's aching heart, and his demons ran for their hidey holes. Wordsworth is right. The world is too much with us, and yet this is not all that can or should be said. Tonight we gather to listen, and Christmas, humble Christmas, begs to speak. On this night, amid the world's craziness, heaven makes love's primal promise: I am with you. I'm with you in the muck and the straw. I'm with you when bodies crash and spirits tire. I'm with you when conflict and violence rear their terrible heads. I will not turn away. I will not abandon you. I will wrap you up with the healing in my wings. I will sing songs of peace to you and to this whole messed up, mean-spirited world. I will point you toward a better way. I will show up for you. I will show up in the dimly lit love you know best, in the love you trust most, a baby cradled in a mother's arms. And then one day soon, I will chase your demons away. This, my friends, is the testimony of Christmas. And it is good news unto you, unto you, unto you, a child is born. Merry Christmas. And now go out into this night wrapped in the magic of shepherds and angels, and may the luminous presence of the Christ child, a light that cannot be overcome by the darkness, comfort you, sustain you, and give you courage for the living of these days. Merry Christmas. Merry
Christmas. We hope this sermon has been meaningful to you and given you a measure of hope, encouragement, and good news. If you would like to make a donation to support this audio ministry, please visit fapc.org/give. Thank you and blessings to you on this day.